Awesome. Well, welcome everyone to LH1 Live. It is March 2026, which is crazy to think. Time is flying and it is my birthday month, so let's all get excited. We have a really cool topic for today. As you can tell, I'm really excited. Couple of things to share, just a little bit like logistics for anyone new to joining our call. First of all, and most importantly, this is your call. So we do have a topic that we talk about most months. Sometimes it's an open conversation. So we do have a topic that we want to talk about. After the topic, we will kind of go into like news and events. So we do have some people to kind of share anything like news topics that they may have worked on throughout the community each month. So we will definitely bring that up. And then secondly, we will talk about, then I will stop the recording. So if you have questions that you maybe want to ask the group that you don't want recorded, that's the perfect time to hang tight with those questions. Or if you're new to the group and want to introduce yourself and say hello, also the perfect time. So we'll do like about an hour recorded
No.
of that various topic and then move on to something that's not. Also important, I won't re I will I don't mute anyone. So if you just want to make sure that you are muted, if you are in a louder place or just kind of chatting with your family next to you, please put yourself on mute. It's *7 if you're on your telephone, but obviously just like navigating to the mute button on your Zoom app, that will allow that if you do have questions or do want to make a comment, especially on the topic at hand that we'll be talking about, that you can jump in and ask questions. It's interactive. It's definitely a conversation. We've got some really cool things that we bring up each month. And so if this is your first call, please make sure to check out the other topics and look to see what other things that you can learn from your LH1 community. So that's kind of about a wrap of what this is. At the end of the call, also, we'll talk about the calls that are happening for the rest of the month to see if any calls kind of suit your fancy of being able to kind of jump into other ones and for more content and interaction with people in our community. So that's kind of the rundown of the call and kind of how everything will go. Without further ado, though, let's kind of jump into the topic. The topic for March is gardening. I'm super excited about this because this is a topic I've wanted to always learn more about and got to like get a sneak peek kind of learning the information already. So I'm going to introduce one of our guest speakers or our guest speaker, Chris Lawton. And Chris is not only effective, but also gardening is probably like there's a way cooler term that you probably have at work, Chris, that I should probably know to be able to share. But he's going to kind of walk us through like a little bit of his journey, but then also some gardening tips and tricks. So Chris, I'll pass it to you.
Hey, thanks, Jessica. Hey, everybody. It's me, Chris Lawton. If you've ever heard me talk about gardening, I get really excited. So I apologize in advance if I get super excited during this call. So I'll start with I've been affected since 2007. So almost 20 years now. And I got into gardening, I guess, when I was younger. It was always something I did kind of to work at grandma's house to make some extra money, whether it was mowing the lawn or, pulling weeds or planting her garden, their gardens in the summertime. So then once I lost my vision, I really didn't enjoy getting headaches in front of a computer screen. I didn't enjoy sitting down all day. So I looked in more ways to work with my hands and be in nature. I didn't really love like being a construction worker or something like that. So gardening was a perfect fit for me. When I graduated from San Francisco State about 7 years ago now, I graduated with a degree in Recreation, Parks, and Tourism Administration. And the way that things worked out, I was able to get an internship at San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. I luckily took a position in their urban agriculture community gardens program. And from there, my first task was working in a farm camp for youth, San Francisco youth. And that's something I'm passionate about is, I get the opportunity to garden in my own yard, but and some folks, they don't get to garden. They don't get to see how things grow, especially in a dense city like San Francisco. So it was really neat to kind of inspire and show the youth how their food is made and educate them on that they could do it as well. So that's kind of snowballed the last 7 years, and I'm still with the program and the department, and I do many different tasks. Sometimes working with the public. Our main community garden, we have 45 community gardens, and our main one is a 3 acre. Most of our gardens are plot based, but this is a farm where there's row crops, and everyone kind of volunteers. We have different, we have a normal rotation of volunteers, and then we go from having like Airbnb will come out and do a volunteer day. We've had the NFL out, but what we do is that we give away all the food for free. What people can come in and harvest on their own, and then what they don't harvest later gets distributed in the mission, a community for free. So that's where I've learned a lot more skills on not just gardening, but kind of growing food. So that's something I'm more passionate about, is growing the food side of it. But along the way, I've learned a lot about different, I'm with my poor vision. I like to grab plants and kind of smell them. So along the way, I've learned about a lot of different plants that have great smells. So yeah, I'm glad that I was chosen for this. This is something I'm passionate about. I'm happy to share if anybody ever wants to reach out to me after this, that have questions. I always say there's no perfect way to garden or farm, but it's I think of it more as not just growing flowers or food to eat, but or plants for pollinators, but also it's a community thing. It can be therapeutic. So I really want to encourage, whether you have no vision or a little bit of vision or all your vision, to try gardening. So yeah, so today we'll kind of talk about how to start your own garden, and maybe some plants that might be easy. And when Jessica and I were speaking the other day about this, I live in California, so we're able to, where I live, I can garden all year round, which I do. I just wrapped up my winter crop and in my backyard, and that was a lot of fun. And then talking to Jessica, like looking up, oh yeah, you should probably be able to start a garden soon. And then she read up the last frost isn't expected until May. So regionally, everyone has different plants or gardens that they can do. So I'll just speak generally. And like I said, if anybody wants to reach out for more, nuanced information, I'm happy to share what I know. So yeah, you always want to find a good spot, whether it's in a windowsill, on a deck, or in your backyard. You want to try to find somewhere that's, in the sun most of the day. You want to make sure you have plenty of space there, whether you're just going to do one pot or a lot of plantings. I prefer, what I do in my personal space is I have raised beds so that I have dedicated space that I know that I can get down on my knees, and it's right at kind of my head level from there, and I can take my time kind of finding which plants are which and working in that space. Gardening can be really challenging, and it can be really simple if you just, cover some bases. So yeah, sun's important. And then, once you find the right location, clearing that location and prepping the soil. You want to have good soil. I was talking with Jessica. The dirt is what you walk on, and soil is what you grow in. You could probably grow anything. You could try to grow anything in the ground, but I always advocate for people to, invest a little bit on soil in the beginning, because it goes a long way. From there, you can, when you're adding soil, you can add a lot of organic material to kind of help supplement the soil purchase. So if you're thinking of doing a garden in the next month or two, start saving your egg cartons. You can add various organic material, and you always want to put that kind of more lower within your bed or area. Let's see. Yeah, from there, you want to figure out what you want to grow. Are you into flowers? Are you just want to grow for the sake of growing, and maybe benefit the pollinators, birds, bees, butterflies? Or are you growing for food? So there's a lot of simple food to grow. This time of year, going into spring and summer, most anything will grow: tomatoes, beans, Sunflowers is an easy flower. You can have culinary herbs of different varieties. So kind of figuring out what you want to grow and really not trying to overextend yourself. I always recommend people, if they've never done it or they're intimidated, to maybe start with one or something small, and then you say, hey, that went okay, or I enjoyed it. It didn't go great, but I enjoyed it. Let me try again. And that's what I always say at work. People come to me and they say, hey, this happened. I go, oh, great. So you learned some things. So try again. It's never something you're going to get instant gratification the first time. So yeah, I'd find your why or what, what is it that you want? If you want food, it's kind of what food do you want to eat? So, and then kind of doing your research from there. I think, I kind of jumped around, I'll jump around a little bit. When I started at this farm, it's Alemany Farm in San Francisco. That's where we held our farm camp. I had to be very, I had to learn the layout. It's not a paved path type of situation. It's not raised beds. It's a lot of but just kind of taking your time, doing your research, being patient with yourself. Sometimes when we plant seeds, people like to do a bunch of holes first and then come back and put the seeds. I can't do that because I can't see where the last hole I put was, So it kind of finding what works for you. I do one seed at a time. And on that note, when you're planting seeds, I'll say the rule of thumb is like twice as deep as the seed is wide, is a kind of a rule of thumb we say. So if you have a big old seed, you want to go a little deeper. If you have a little tiny seed, like a lettuce seed, you want to go super shallow. Really for me, as we all kind of know, I think with our vision, it's something that we need to practice often is patience, and planning sometimes and being organized. So that's something I always try to do when I'm gardening. In terms of spacing, each plant has its different space, but you never want to overcrowd anything. So always kind of give yourself enough space. Something else to think about, Jessica and I were talking about, is like, if your sun's coming from one direction, you don't want to put your plant that's going to be big in front of all your other plants, because then that one's going to grow and block the sun from your other plants, and you'll have, the one plant will be really nice, but everything will behind it will be not good, because everything really relies on the sun to grow. So from there, you find your you got your location, you got your soil figured out. You got what you want to do, whether it's flowers, herbs, vegetables. And then from there, you got to work on watering. This is something that I like, when watering in my yard, I set up a watering, like back in the day, you used to have like a rain bird watering system, and you'd have to read all the different dials and figure out when to water. And now they do it where it connects to your phone or an app. And that's been very helpful for me. It's like, oh, it's raining today. I can turn off my water. But watering's important. If it's super hot, you might need to water every day, every other day, depending on the size of the plant. I told Jessica, I don't want to get too deep in this. So if anyone has more questions later, I could tell you more, but, watering can be really, just depends on the type of soil you have or the type of temperature or how big the plant. But I think that sometimes is where a lot of people make mistakes. They either overwater or underwater a plant. That's where they kind of lose success. And yeah, so from there, it's just time. And I encourage people, to engage in their community if they are deciding to garden or do their own at-home farming, that they should talk to their local nursery and see, hey, what works best here. At our house, we always like to have native plants around, because that helps with pests. There's different type of plants that will be more beneficial to keep certain pests away, because it'll bring other bugs that happen to deter other pests. So within gardening, a lot of times it's the keep it simple method. really don't try to overextend yourself. If you've never gardened, don't go to the store and buy $200 in plants and try to plant them all. Let's see. Where else could I go from there? I could talk about, I'll share with you three herbs that are easy to grow. Like if you were going to grow just maybe in your windowsill, and you like to use mint in your water or as a garnish for things, mint is super easy, but I would never recommend really putting mint in the ground because it's really hard to get rid of and it takes over. It's vigorous, so it'll take over things. Things like basil and chives. Chives come back every year. Basil's a good one to have on your windowsill. Like I said, mint as well. Flowers that are easy to grow. Cosmos are really easy. And sunflowers. I enjoy sunflowers. I have one in my front yard right now. It's super tall, so I'm excited to see when that blooms. I like gardening in my front yard to kind of spread joy to the neighborhood. But in my backyard, it's like, I'm an eater, so I like to grow food that I can eat. And also marigolds. Marigolds is a great one. I like doing flowers because of the limited vision I do have. It's nice to just see like, oh, is that a new flower? Like, wait. And then I go closer, like, oh, look, there's a new flower. So something I didn't say too, when you're doing your garden, is mulch is your friend. Especially I nobody likes to pull weeds, but for me, and with our vision, it's not fun. Like I don't like searching for weeds at work when they ask me to do, like, especially when they're like, hey, can you pull this plant out? I'm like, I don't know. I can't identify that plant from this plant. So that's not like my strong suit. But so mulch is our friend. If you put down mulch, which mulch can be just like a layer of cover. So it could be wood chips or straw mulch, which is essentially like hay without the seeds. You put that down and it keeps water down in your soil, which is good. It doesn't evaporate. So you're not watering as much, but then it also stops. It's a barrier for other plants like weeds to grow. And then I would say the last three things I would say is for vegetables, super easy. Radishes, carrots can be pretty simple as well. Radishes, lettuce. Lettuce is great. And like going into the summer crop, but zucchinis can be really easy, and you have a lot of them. Like every year, I end up making zucchini bread and giving my neighbors zucchini, and they're making zucchini bread. I get tired of zucchini coming out of my ears. But yeah, that's kind of my quick and not so dirty gardening. I'd really love if anybody had questions. I'm happy to answer. If Jessica, if I miss anything, I didn't want to take up too much time because I can go for hours if you guys want me to. But I don't want to lose anybody either.
Chris, this is Colonel Don. Can I ask a question, please?
Please, Colonel, go on.
Okay, last year at the end of our season in Michigan, I bought from Harbor Freight. I bought a greenhouse,
Great.
a 10x12, and now that the spring is coming up, soon, I'm finally going to get around to assembling it next week. And good luck on that, eh?
I was gonna say I can't come help you. I'm sorry, I can't help.
And so anyways, our year-round winter temperature is varies between minus 20 and maybe a plus 20 between, our hardcore winter. So once I get the greenhouse going, what would be an optimum or average temperature I should keep the greenhouse during the winter if I put like a heater in there?
Well, you definitely don't want it to get to freezing. I guess it kind of depends on what you're putting in there. If you're trying to keep the same plants that grew in the summer, you'd want to keep it a lot warmer, but you definitely don't want it to get close to freezing. And I think a greenhouse is great. I even use a little greenhouse in my backyard to keep our some of our more sensitive like plants alive in the winter. And it worked. It was my first experience witnessing, and greenhouses can be great because it does hold the heat. And you may find that, I mean, I imagine when it gets that cold to negative 20, you definitely need a heater, but you'd be surprised how much heat, depending on the quality of the greenhouse, how much heat it can hold. And they usually come with vents. So, if it's getting down to negative 20, close the vents, let it get hot and steamy in there. And like I said, depending on what you're growing or keep trying to keep alive in there, plants don't like to be cold, most of them, especially food. So anything below 50 is going to be, they're not going to be happy, but keeping them alive has definitely got to be above freezing. Does that help? Does that answer your question, Colonel?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great.
Chris, Lorenzo in Connecticut here. I enjoy planting too. I have fig trees and all that stuff. And it's interesting. I think I'm in zone 7 last time I researched it. And but back to you had mentioned the marigolds. I use those, if I'm correct remembering this, I use those near my tomatoes plants, all the plants there. They keep away the bugs so I don't have to use pesticides.
Exactly. I love marigolds. They're great. It's a great deterrent, one of the better deterrents. In our farm that we work, or that I work at, that we use those at the end of rows, as kind of like a, just yeah, it's a good, great deterrent, for bugs. It's interesting how the animals and bugs, they know like, oh, this smell, this plant's here, I'm going away. And it does make it. I people think I'm crazy when I say, because they want to spray their plants with something, and what am I gonna do with these bugs? I tell them, plant these plants. It's gonna make a big difference. And marigolds, yeah, it's got a dual purpose kind of situation. It puts out beautiful flowers, it grows easily, and it takes care of pests.
Yeah, because I have individual pots for every plant, except for my herb garden, which is a raised about 3 feet high.
Okay.
But I said based on our challenges, I put things organized so I know parsley's together. It turns the other. So when I go to harvest and stuff, because when they start going crazy, it's a challenge. But I'll do the marigolds there. Each individual pot, I will put at least one marigold in there
Good.
each zone. So it does really help.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. Yeah, I'd like to see your garden someday. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'll share some pictures with you. I'll exchange numbers later because I do have more questions on my fig trees. I want to do
Please,
something different.
how is the weather there now? Are you getting are things starting to grow, like ready to grow now, or is it still
No,
pretty
we still got
cold?
snow in the ground.
Yeah, as I like I said, I told Jessica, yeah, you should be able to grow soon, and I have just my ignorance there. She's yeah, I get it. But hopefully soon enough it'll be spring and things will start pushing out flowers and new growth.
Yeah. Hopefully end of April. Last year was good. We had an early planting in May, and I got a lot of stuff out last year. And hopefully we'll see how the weather goes this year. But
Yeah, you never know.
thanks for info, man.
You're welcome. Yeah, we'll exchange numbers. Maybe Lisa can help with that.
Cool.
Thank you. Has anybody ever does anybody garden besides Lorenzo and Colonel? Or is anybody pro gardening just kind of intimidated by it? Or are there people on this call who are like, heck no, I don't even like flowers. I just wonder.
Actually, I had a quick question.
Yeah, please.
You said you worked in the Parks and Recreation Center of San Francisco.
Yeah.
So before I lost my vision, I was kind of like very interested in this whole like concept of bringing like more greenery and like greening into like the urban space. Do you guys have like any projects that do that, or anything that bring more nature into the city?
Well, San Francisco's pretty nature friendly. We have San Francisco's urban forestry where they maintain trees on the streets, and I think it's for every one tree that gets taken down, two more get planted. We do like for my depart or for my program, we pass out. We have monthly garden resource days, so we engage with the public. We pass out compost, we pass out mulch, and we have mulch for them to take. And we offer plants, seeds, and we bring master gardeners to kind of talk and answer questions. I think we have some of the best gardeners in the country, if I say so myself. Who maintain Golden Gate Park, I think one of the best parks in the country. And yeah, it's a beautiful place. There's concrete everywhere, of course. There's people who like to mess up things, but we always every park has the we don't just do monocrop things. It's we do rotating different crops or I mean flower rotations and We grow a lot of our stuff in house. We have a Golden Gate Park has a big nursery, and many greenhouses where they kind of grow a lot of plants and the flowers. There's always fresh flowers in City Hall that come from us. But an actual program, I'm not certain myself. I would imagine there is, but we put Rec and Park, a little shout out. There's nowhere in the city that you're nowhere in the city are you 10 minute walk, more than 10 minute walk away from a park. So in that respect,
Yeah.
you're within 10 minutes of of green, at least.
Yeah, no, Golden Gate Bridge Park is very, very beautiful. I went years ago. Yeah, and how could I get into that space of urban, I guess urban forestry, nature in the city, if you
Who,
know.
yeah, who, what's your name? Sorry, who's this?
My name's Adan.
Done.
I'm in Dallas. I don't think we have too many programs like that here. I don't think Dallas is a very nature city friendly city.
Yeah, when I took classes at San Francisco State, it was interesting how we take it for granted being here, and then you learn like a lot of places, like they say, oh, we have this much percentage of our city as green space, but then it's all in one area. It's like you have to go to, so that's what it's interesting is ours is kind of interweaved, it's intertwined with the
Yeah.
everywhere.
And that's what I would want for like every city, every like especially like centralized areas where there's not a lot of space.
I agree. That's why I love my job working community gardens and urban agriculture, because we get to engage with the community, and they are in their apartments and they don't get a backyard. So when they come to work, and most of our community gardens, like I was saying earlier, are plot based. So they'll have like a 4x8 box that they get as theirs, and they get to maintain it and grow what they please. And it's really cool to see people enjoy that and find the therapy and community in that as well. So that's why I'm kind of talking here today. I'm encouraging you guys all to find a community and maybe a little bit of therapy in gardening. I would recommend you, Idan, to maybe find a
Yeah.
community garden in your area, or like I said, start with a nursery and have a conversation there. Maybe reaching out
Okay.
to the Dallas municipality and see what kind of programs they might have. Even in
Yeah.
the smaller city that I live in, I find that they do have, even though I don't work in the city that I live, they have community gardens in this city as well. So that's a good, I think, first step for you there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you so
Thank
much.
you.
I have a question. This is Mark from Seattle.
Hey, Mark.
Are you saying that I could put tomato starts in a large pot and then plant marigold seeds in there, the same pot as well?
Yeah, if it's a large enough pot, certainly. And you put the tomato in the middle and then maybe the marigolds on the perimeter. Marigolds are, you don't want to over marigold it, but they're pretty, they'll grow. So maybe starting, yeah, like you said, put a tomato plant that's already established in there, let it start growing. At the same time, plant seeds of marigold and make sure, like with any seed, you got to keep it watered and until it's a plant, and then it's kind of, on a normal watering schedule after that. But if you're gonna put seed directly into the ground, moisture is its friend. It needs moisture and good draining soil. I always want to tell people don't you don't want like clay soil. You want a good mixture of clay and sand kind of thing. But yeah, marigold would be a great, like Lorenzo was saying, he adds it to a lot of his pots. And yeah, I mean, the smaller the pot, you're just gonna have roots competing. So, you might have marigold, but you might not have a big plant that you're trying to go. So if you, like you said, a bigger pot, you could probably plant a couple of things in there. I plant lettuces often right there. There's something the indigenous people do, the Three Sisters, I think it's called, growing where a corn, a bean, and squash all in like the same little area, and they kind of work together. The bean grows up the corn, and the squash shades the ground, so it keeps the moisture down. Yeah, you could certainly, do things close together.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking. Seattle's got some great, Washington's got some beautiful green space up there too. Seattle, they do a great job of, I think a lot of rooftop gardens in Portland as well. They're trying to do more, utilizing, you don't have the space to make gardens maybe on the land, but utilizing rooftops as different garden spaces. So that's pretty cool too.
It's super green up here.
Yeah.
But it rains all the time. That's why it's so green.
Yeah, right. It's a trade-off.
Hey, Chris. It's Chris from Long Beach.
Hey, Chris.
Hey. You have any tips for people that may not have a yard, like maybe something like indoor gardening for people with an apartment, perhaps?
Yeah, for sure. Like in a window, you can do basil. You could probably do mint still. I recommend you could do marigolds inside in a pot. You could do a lot of things in a pot in a windowsill. They may not be as, and like I said, I don't know if you heard in the beginning, pick your area. If you want a south facing window, somewhere that's full sun kind of thing. So you may not be able to put something outside, but if you are going to put it near a window, make sure it's a window or like a slider window that has the most sun. You could grow lettuce. We can chat for sure, and I can guide you on what to do if you're interested.
My balcony faces south.
Balcony's perfect. If you have a balcony, that's great.
That does face south. So
Jessica's got we were talking about, she's got like a 2x4 little box on her balcony, and I think she'll have some good success. And you're down there. Yeah, we're going to turn you into a gardener, Chris, for sure. We'll get you squared away. In fact, I just saw at Costco, they had a little 2x4 raised bed in a box, planter box. It might have been expensive. I didn't look at the price, but I was like, oh, that's cool. It's just something it's attainable. You can get it. It's raised up a little bit, so I'm a big guy. I don't like being on my hands and knees with my face, and I don't see good, so I got my head in the ground. It's just not fun.
Yeah.
So for sure, you can have a bunch of pots scattered throughout your balcony, and you can grow many different things for sure, especially down where you are.
And I would love to not kill a rosemary bush or tree like I did the last time I had one, and that was when I had sight.
So you're gonna be better now.
I think with our vision, our vision grants us different we'll learn different skills. Maybe you'll be a little more focused on it.
Do you have what kind of railings do you have there, Chris, on your
it's just wood.
Because you can hang really like
that. Yeah, but it's a fairly it's not large, but I mean, I could fit like a 2x4. I could hang stuff from the inside, or maybe even the outside. I might have to get clearance from the property manager on that, but I could.
If you can, hang stuff off there. It really has a lot of space.
Yep, and then it's nice to see flowers kind of draping off the outside of the balcony. As people walk by or drive by, say, hey, that looks pretty nice. Look at those flowers, or whatever it may be. So,
Go ahead. Oh, there is an amazing jacaranda tree right outside the sidewalk that kind of like leans over a little bit into the balcony, which that should be blooming in a few weeks. Usually April is the big month for jacaranda trees down here. So nice purple flowering tree.
I'm glad you acknowledge it, and it's nice to look at. That's great.
It smells great too.
Yep. So we start engaging those other senses a little more, huh?
Yep.
Okay. Hi, this is Tess.
And hi, Tess.
I have a comment. We have a honeysuckle in the corner of our house, and when it's blooming, it's just a beautiful smell that we can open the window and get that smell coming in. It's really nice. But it's a climbing vine, so we had to make sure it didn't climb up and pull the gutters down. But Let's see. I was going to say I've been gardening in pots for a long time, and I think I got this tip from somebody, but as far as drainage for a pot, I usually put some styrofoam in the bottom, but also maybe rocks, but rocks make the pot heavy, so that. So is there something you recommend for drainage for the bottom of a pot?
Not a big fan of styrofoam, but I understand the weight that you're talking about. They do make like lighter weight lava rock looking balls that are good to help with
Right.
drainage at the bottom. Or there's things that
Zoom.
there's wood chips. You could do wood chips at the bottom as well.
Well,
Something more organic with styrofoam is what I'd say, but you could put like layers of egg cartons down there to kind of create, you just want, well, also a good draining soil. If And if your pot has enough holes at the bottom, then you may not need anything at the bottom, depending on the size of the pot. I personally don't put anything besides soil in my pots and compost and different organic material to kind of break down. And something that I just talked about, Jessica, when we work on the farm or when I garden, I never turn over my soil. I never rip the roots out. The roots are nutrients. You harvest your plant, you cut it at the base, and you leave everything in there. And you plant right next to it, and then the new roots. And the bugs inside there, Jessica said, "I don't want bugs in my house." It's not bugs that want to come out for you. It's just bugs that break down soil that they live in soil. A nice healthy soil is a live soil. So yeah, I don't ever give any nutrients to my soil. I do amend. I'll do compost once a year, maybe twice a year. I put my coffee grounds in my soil, but a nice quality soil. I like I told you in the beginning, everybody, I'd invest, don't try to get the cheapest soil. You don't need to overpay for soil, but just, quality gardening soil should be good. And like I said, a lot of the nutrients come in the plant material that breaks down on the inside. But
Oh,
yeah, I
sure, I don't want
understand.
bugs. Chris,
Yeah, exactly.
real quick too, people are talking about drainage and stuff. What I've been using the last few years now is nursery pots. They're relatively inexpensive. You can go to the nurseries themselves, or I get it from Amazon, and they get 10 gallon, 15 gallon, and they already have holes on the bottom of it. And I've used since I've been in, if you have a better idea, please speak up. I've been using Miracle-Gro, but I went to organic soil now, potting soil. And I've been using that. And each year I dump it in the lawn and fill out holes, whatever. And I
There you
put
go.
new soil every, and I put new soil every year. Like I said, the organic actually was cheaper than Miracle-Gro last year. So I love the way it grew. But those nursery pots are light. They're plastic. They have the holes in the bottom already. And they're not that expensive.
Are you talking about the black ones? Are they black?
Yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
that's that. And see, that's where I should have said something like that. Yeah, I don't use like decorative pots, but if you are, I think you should use what Lorenzo's talking about, a basic that usually has 4 or 5 holes in it already. And then you put that pot in a decorative pot if you like to have a nice big clay pot that's beautiful, or instead of filling it all the way up and only having one hole at the bottom. Yeah, put a yeah, definitely you want a pot that has holes in it for sure. A pot that doesn't have any holes in it, it's going to have water lock. It's airs you need moisture to be able to move, it needs to be able to breathe. If not, it just becomes aerobic, I think is the term. Aerobic, yep. And it's too much water, no oxygen. Yeah, Lorenzo's totally right.
It'd
And
be a
those
good way
are
to start inexpensively, yeah.
and thank you for suing that shout out for me, Lorenzo. I don't want to be the guy, but we're not big Miracle-Gro folks over here. And please don't buy Miracle-Gro. I know they're the ones that advertise to you. Go get some organic potting soil. Go talk to your local garden center and garden supply store, and just tell them what you're doing, and that that you want a nice, healthy, organic soil, that I totally agree. It's usually ends up being cheaper because they don't have to pay for commercials. And local soil is good too. You know, if you go to like a landscape supply place, like say you're doing a lot, and somebody's like, "Hey, I want to build a 4x8 box," go to your landscape supply store or your local nursery, and they'll usually have organic soil in bulk, and they make it. You know, they build it. You know, so yeah, that's my spiel.
Yeah, it's a good thing we have an engineer on the call of the garden.
Speaking of engineers, I have to tell you how I brought AI into this conversation. So I got super pumped. As you say engineer, I think software engineering. So I was talking to Chris about all this, and it's a lot of information and it's hard to start. Like you just said, like make sure you're using soil. I'm like, oh my gosh, where do I even find soil? So like I have so many questions based on like the information Chris was giving. And so I'm like, where do I go and how do I find good soil and what's good soil and all that? And so as he was kind of giving me more information, I started prompting AI and started saying like, tell me a place I can find good soil. I live in Denver and here's what I want to plant. Here's the size of my planter and this is what I like. This is my ultimate look of what I'm going for, and I'm going for flowers because the brighter the better, then I can see them from afar. And I mean afar meaning like the chair next to it. And so I'm like, so I'm telling him all these, and as Chris is telling me, hey, don't forget to do like have a base and make sure like compostable whatever. So I'm like, great, make sure you tell me the information or what's compostable, is that a word?
Yes.
And so as Chris was kind of telling me like the tips and tricks, I'm writing, feeding this all into AI and saying like, give me examples of this and tell me how to build and how to do these layers. And I have a full gardening plan now, with the support and help of Chris and AI, of like literally step-by-step instructions, as if Chris was at my house with me, of like layers of like egg cartons and then like the dirt or any sort of compostable things, and then just like soil and like where I can get it and what I should be asking for. And then kind of like the look of the box of what I'm going for. They're like, if you're looking for a lush, flow overflowing bright box, it says, and then it was giving me various flowers and then telling me the colors of the flowers and like how many to buy and where to put them. So it's really cool to be able to. I feel like I was just so ignited because I had zero information when the first conversation started, and then Chris gave me enough of what I needed to like then be able to like ask more detailed questions, and then AI just fed me like the tiniest itty-bittiest details. So now I know. Exactly. Now I just have to wait for it to warm up. But I have everything. And so it was really cool to feel informed so fast, with the information that Chris taught me in such a short time. It was cool. So thanks, Chris.
And I love that too, because I can't answer what's going to grow great in Colorado. And I was like, oh, you were asking this question. Is this flower good? I'm like, yeah, it should be good. Then you looked it up. It's like, will not grow in Colorado. I'm like, see, that's the good relationship between, I can tell you like a general overview or what my experience is. But, you know, technology, as we all know, sometimes it can be as challenging as it is. It's a really good tool in our tool belt.
And especially because I mean, I want like the more fragrant flower, the better, and I want something super bright. And so I went online and I'm also like, I don't know where do you buy flowers? And how do I find those? And so just to kind of get like as a beginner and just trying to like look to see where to go. And yeah, I mean, I'm on this balcony, and so I was like, I'm on like in a city in a high rise, and I get like insane direct sunlight for all of the morning, and then it's actually cold on the other side. Even in the summertime, it's still pretty chilly out there. So then, like, what can kind of withstand all of that? And so, yeah, it was cool how it kind of like gave that very like it knows that traumatic weather shift. So it was really interesting. It was cool. So highly recommend leveraging some AI in there.
I love it. That's great. And you kind of encouraged me and inspired me, like, hey, I need to start using AI more, because that was cool. Literally on our phone call, you were passing me up in knowledge really fast.
No. But I mean, to have a whole plan was crazy. I mean, it was within minutes that like, I mean, when Chris said, make sure you have good soil, I'm like, that means nothing to me. So I typed it in, like, what's good soil and where do I find that? And so And it quickly was like, show me, here's where I live. Show me the closest local place to go. And like, do they have classes? Like, yes, here's go here. And they have a class on this day. So you can learn prior to your freeze date or whatever. And so that was, yeah. So I was just using all the tools that you gave me and took it to how I could apply it into my local environment.
I love it.
It's amazing too. Just I'm jumping onto that because when Maria had mentioned to me about getting AI to ask a question because we just didn't have experience with something, a question I was asking with. Ever since then, for the past 3 or 4 weeks, anytime I reference anything, I would ask something about in my wood shop. I'd ask about the certain wood or something, and it would chime in and it remembered. Well, since you're LHO and affected, you want to avoid this kind of dust and this and. Every time I ask any
Wow.
question, food, anything.
That's
It's
great.
yeah, I don't know how it's stored, how if I initiate it or it just remembered me or whatever it did on Gemini through Google. It is amazing. And a reference every time I say it'll since you have this, you should watch for this or not do this or yeah, it's pretty
That's
cool.
cool.
It's Maria Lorenzo. Isn't it amazing? It just
Oh my God.
remembers all those little qualities about you. And who you are, where you are, all the things, and especially the LHON and affected and the blind, visually impaired. And it applies it to so many things you ask it. I think it's just incredible. It just is. It's just really fun.
Really is. And types of food. If I ask them about a recipe, well, if you should concentrate on this kind of food that helps with the stress on your body for LHO. It's mind-boggling.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
So thank you.
Hi, Chris. This is Daniel, living in north of Everett on Puget Sound in the North Seattle area.
Nice. Hi,
Got a
Daniel.
nice, hello, got a pretty good sized garden in the backyard and grow lots of things. And
On.
I really enjoy getting out there and I'm on a smaller side of stature and I don't mind getting down on my hands and knees and doing whatever I can. I'd love to be in the soil, especially when it's warm. We've actually in the Seattle area, the other gentleman who lives in Seattle mentioned it rains all the time. We have our fair share of rain, but we've been very lucky the last, it's been actually one of the most mild winters we've had in, gosh, a few decades. But anyway, yes, marigolds right in between tomato plants, just all sorts of fun things you learn over the years. But yeah, our sunflowers, we made a mistake 1 year of having the sunflowers on the sun side of other smaller plants, and that didn't work very well. So I understand. I really appreciate your knowledge, and we enjoy that. We enjoy gardening immensely. So appreciate your tips.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate that comment. It's funny, it's one of those live and learn things. People, I made that mistake. Well, now you know next year to do it differently. And you're always there's always learning a different, better, different way to do things. That's great.
Well, this is Tom from Central Washington State. I'm a little late to the party today. The United States is broken up into 13 growing zones, and you really need to start out with understanding your zone. Like I'm in
Yeah.
zone 7 here in
Yeah.
Central Washington, and then you kind of build what you're interested in around that zone.
That's a great point, Tom. You're right. The zones Tom's referring to, everybody is there's a you can look it up online, but it definitely is a good reference guide. It tells you what will grow or won't grow there. What time of year you can start doing things. Yeah, thanks for joining the call, Tom. That's a great point. I didn't mention that.
Well, since I lost my vision, I've planted 150 trees on my 10-acre property.
Wow.
Awesome. That's
I've
great.
had a bunch of,
Wow.
I got 50 giant sequoias growing onto my property,
Oh, that's
for
awesome. Wow.
example. So it's kind of been my new hobby since I've had to retire and can't leave the house anymore, really. But so that's my new interest is in planting trees and taking care of them.
That sounds great. 10 acres. That sounds like a playground. That sounds so great. Yeah, the possibilities are endless, and it really is rewarding. You don't have to commute to work. You don't have to commute to your hobby. It's right there when you wake up and go to bed. you know, and it is really cool to see it over time grow. You know, those giant sequoias, they have a lot of potential to get huge. You're making your own redwood forest up there, huh?
That's right. And they grow pretty fast. It's interesting.
Will a sequoia grow in zone 5?
Sequoias are the hardiest conifers on the planet. They grow at 10,000 feet in the High Sierra. I tried 5 coastal redwoods, and they can't handle below freezing temperatures, so they died the first winter.
Yeah.
So I started doing more research before spending the money at that point. But sequoias they're bulletproof. In fact, the Arbor Day Foundation has adopted the giant sequoia as the tree they suggest planting because it produces 20% more oxygen than other conifer trees.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's something I don't do a lot is I don't grow trees very much. That's really interesting to hear. That's awesome. Great. Giant sequoias.
I live in central Washington on the side of a mountain. I'm at 2,500 feet. And I've got western larch trees and Douglas fir trees and grand fir trees. And they're about 125 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
Well, those 50 sequoias are going to be hitting 350.
Wow.
So at some point, it's going to be kind of interesting.
That's a lot of timber. Are you on the Cascades? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Central Cascades. Yep.
Nice. That's great. So somewhere on the way to Leavenworth.
Yeah, I'm about an hour away from Leavenworth, just off I-90.
What a beautiful place. That's beautiful.
Oh, there. Goodness. It's paradise. If you like forests and mountains.
Can you ship me some wood? You have the Douglas fir. What's the diameter in that? I know it probably costs more to ship it than to.
Oh, God. Yeah. But I planted a lot of different maple trees, chocolate mimosas, some Chinese fir trees. They call Eastern Asian fir trees. So I planted a ton of different things. And every October, my property has a billion colors as all those maple trees' leaves turn color on me. It's really beautiful.
That's beautiful. That's great. Wow. Tom, do you do any gardening for food or flowers or herbs, or just mostly you're into the big trees?
Well, I'm a tree guy, but I've thought about building a greenhouse this spring and maybe starting to grow some of my own food in it.
Well, if you need any advice or if you have any questions, I'd be happy to guide you. It sounds like a beautiful property you have.
Well, thank you. It's I'm lucky.
Yeah.
I worked in the nuclear industry for 32 years, so I paid my house off in 3 years.
Wow.
So I went and lost my job because of my eyesight, and I don't have a mortgage, so I consider myself very fortunate.
That's great. Wow.
Absolutely. All right, last but not least, any other growing questions I have? We do have one more segment that I want to cover. We're going to go a tidbit over the hour, but do have one more thing we want to cover. So any other last minute gardening questions?
Oh, I was going to reveal some top secret information about Colonel Green Thumb there, my dad and my mom. So we grew up on a 120-acre Christmas tree and horse farm. And so,
what?
Yeah, they employed child labor as children, the three of us. But the gardening for us as kids, I think, is great for, you know, your children. And building strength and grit and tenacity, dealing with overcoming poison ivy and things like that. And I think it helped build a little bit of perseverance in our, you know, mountain we had to climb with LHON. So it's a great thing. So I just want to say thanks, Mom and Dad, while you're there. And it's a great thing for you, for us and for our families and kids.
Great memories.
So, that's awesome.
They planted 40,000 trees.
Wow. Wow.
True.
Wow.
That's great.
When you planted them, were they, what size were they?
Seedlings.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Seedlings.
Oh, wow. Wow, unbelievable. 40,000. That's so cool to watch over time develop. That's so neat. Wow.
Oh, yeah. spent a summer trimming those one by one until you come upon a bee's nest or hornet's nest. And so, yeah, great. It was good memories, though, for sure.
I'd love to talk to you, Rob, sometime about that, because it's one of those things that being in agriculture, you wonder, how do they make them so perfect? So I'm sure you have the technique down. That's interesting.
You want to solve the climate change issues in North America? Plant 1 trillion conifers from the Mexican border to Alaska.
Great idea.
I love it. I love it. That's great. Yeah. You're doing your part, Tom.
Well, I've only done 145. They did 40,000. I feel like a wimp.
There's still time, Tom.
I get most of my stuff from fastgrowingtrees.com. So I'm not screwing around. I'm not planting bare root seedlings. I'm planting 7-footers that come in a 5-gallon pot. It's I started out with bare root trees, and I had about a 50% success rate. But as soon as I started buying trees from fastgrowingtrees.com in 3, 5, and 7-gallon pots, I've got a 97% success rate.
Wow, that's great.
So they're expensive, but it's just, the success rate is so great. I'll never go back to doing bare root seedling.
Hmm. Yeah, we've heard young men don't plant trees. Wait too long, you need to plant the big ones.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just so nice to put something in the ground and look at it, and it's already 7 feet tall.
I think I remember them selling 1-foot sequoias at the gift shop at the Sequoia National Park.
Oh, yep. No kidding.
Yeah, like in like little bags to take back to whatever part of the country or world you go back home to and see what happened.
Well, I get mine from a company in Northern California, and they come in 2-gallon pots, and they're about 18 inches tall. So they've been growing for a few years. So I put those in the ground, and you know, they're 4-footers inside of 2 years.
That's great.
Wow.
So it's really interesting.
And then once they're established, they'll just take off. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for being engaging in conversation with me about something I'm really passionate about. It's nice to hear that everyone else is into it. And even if you're not into it, I encourage you to try a pot in a window, a box on the balcony, a garden box in your backyard, or some row crops, or even just growing in your front yard. Please give it a shot, and maybe you'll find that you'll enjoy it.
Thank you.
All right, Chris, thank you so much for your information and knowledge and wealth, and but most of all, your passion for gardening, because I am pumped and really excited to be able to report back. So we'll have to do like a midsummer check-in to see how everyone's plants are growing. But thank you, Chris, for being here. Totally appreciate it.
Thank you,
Chris. And kind of how it integrates into your LA Twin story. All right, let's jump to our next thing. And shout out to all the green thumbs out there. That's pretty cool. Next thing I want to kind of jump into, I'm going to introduce Melinda Marsh and Kathy. They actually have some cool information to share with us on EveryLife.
Okay, I'm going to start. This is Kathy Scanlon. I hope to whet your appetite a little bit on advocacy. I'll start with a quick little background on the EveryLife Foundation, and I'll throw it to Melinda after that to get a little bit more involved in how LHON has interacted with EveryLife. So EveryLife Foundation for Rare Diseases was founded in 2009 by a Dr. Emil Kakis, who has dedicated his life to the development of novel drug treatments for rare diseases. He started the EveryLife Foundation to drive legislative policy change and to bring needed treatments to rare disease patients. EveryLife is primarily an advocacy group for rare diseases and has the following policy goals: close the innovation gap for the 95% of rare diseases that have no FDA-approved treatments currently, eliminate the diagnostic odyssey for rare disease patients, improve the regulatory process and advance regulatory science for rare disease therapies, ensure patient access to safe and efficient therapies and cures at the earliest moment possible, and empower patients to develop an impactful voice in policymaking, drug development, and regulatory decision making. So it's a big, it's a lot to take in, but we had a wonderful time. So I'm going to let Melinda give a little bit more information on how Lawn has begun to interact with this organization.
Thanks, Kathy. Our engagement with advocacy has been in partnership with the Every Life Foundation, as Kathy mentioned. And so far, that includes our 2025 conference, where we had a speaker named Gracie Maurer, who came from Every Life Foundation to share with us more about the topic of advocacy and the opportunities within this organization. Then last week, Kathy and I went to Capitol Hill to the Rare Disease Advocacy on Capitol Hill Week, which happens the week before Rare Disease Day. That's on February 28. Hopefully we all know that on this call, but it's every year except on leap years when it's on the most rare day of the year, February 29. Kathy's going to share more about what we did on Capitol Hill next as a part of the opportunities to engage with advocacy as a part of Every Life and better represent LHON.
Okay. So this past week when we attended was actually the 15th anniversary of Rare Disease Week, which was pretty exciting. Neither of us knew what to expect, but we were very well trained in the first couple of days when we arrived. We were there from Tuesday to Thursday. So the first 2 days are spent in basically getting to know each of us. There was over 800 attendees representing many of the various rare diseases that are out there. So we attended on the first day a lot of seminars led by professionals in the rare disease world, along with families with experience in the diagnostic odyssey of rare diseases. We also had time set aside on Wednesday afternoon to prepare for meetings that we were about to have on Thursday. So basically on Thursday, they had scheduled meetings for every attendee to meet with your two member or your House of Representatives members and your two senators. I was obviously with the Pennsylvania folks because I'm from Pennsylvania, and Melinda met with people from California. Both of us had a large contingency. Pennsylvania this year had the largest group with 55 attendees. And Melinda, I think, was right behind. California had about 50. So it was very interesting. Unfortunately, you don't actually get to meet with your individual senator or house most times. We were meeting with our legislative aides who work with them on health decisions and health policies. So each person that gets to talk, the meetings are scheduled for half an hour, and you get to talk for about 3 to 4 minutes. So you can provide a little bit of background on your story, your individual story. And for those of you who don't know, I'm John Coughlin's sister, and both John and my other brother, Kevin, are affected. I currently am not affected at this point, but I'm very interested in becoming an advocate because I have 6 grandchildren who I worry about. They've all passed down to them through myself and then to my daughters, to my grandchildren. So when you drop that off, you have your few minutes to talk to your legislative aide about your story and then also about our asks. So I am going to take a few minutes to briefly tell you. So what we focused on, 2 different asks. We focused on the 5 asks that were coming from Every Life Foundation, and Melinda and I had put together 3 asks specific to LHON. I'm not going to go into great depth on these because we're really running out of time and I know it's late, but here's the 5. The first one for Every Life was Rare Disease Innovation Hub appropriations request. The FDA has a Rare Disease Innovation Hub, which is currently only staffed by 1 person, and they're not able to really achieve what needs to be done in that department. So they're looking for an appropriation of additional funds and some staffing to grow that department to benefit research and the FDA. The second ask was to support congressional action to ensure today's patients will benefit from robust rare disease treatment pipelines. And this again has to do with the FDA. Congress explicitly gave the FDA authority to uphold the highest standards of regulatory safety and rigor while applying a tailored approach. Such approaches have included establishment of accelerated approval pathways, consideration of the totality of evidence in the regulatory review, inclusion of patient experience data, and utilization of innovative clinical trial designs and real-world evidence. Obviously, when dealing with rare diseases, the pattern and the process needs to be tailored. And that's what we're asking for in this ask. The next ask was for the Credit for Caring Act. We all know that those of us who have rare diseases or with families with rare diseases, caregiving becomes a financial impact on the family. And this act is looking to provide up to at minimum, from $2,000. So the credit would cover 30% of qualified caregiving expenses over $2,000 up to a total of $5,000. And this would be offered to all caregivers. The fourth one asked from the Every Life Foundation was for Genomic Answers for Children's Health Act. It's HR 7118. And that act would bring, it would ask for genomic testing at birth or at much earlier timeframes than it currently is happening. With that, we would be able to hopefully diagnose people at a much earlier stage. And many of the diseases that are considered rare diseases need this in order to start treatments earlier. As they progress, people's lives get worse and worse. And just as we look at from LHON, if we knew earlier on that you had the gene for LHON, there's many ways that you could possibly avoid having it trigger and become LHON and be affected. And that would be through avoiding smoke, avoiding certain medications, and obviously excessive alcohol. The last one and the fifth of the asks for the Every Life Foundation was asking our members of Congress to join the Rare Disease Congressional Caucus in the 119th Congress. And actually, they met as we were having lunch on the last day. We actually saw Amy Klobuchar, who is on the Senate representative on there. And they are moving forward. There are many people on it. As for myself, my representative, Lloyd Smucker, is already a member. We asked our two senators to also become members. For LHON Collective, we asked for three asks. To fund the National Eye Institute at $1 billion in fiscal year 27, to protect the National Eye Institute as a standalone institute within the NIH, and to support the passing of the Genomic Answers for Children's Health Act, which I mentioned earlier, which is HR 7118. The next thing I'd like to briefly talk about that Every Life offers is a it's called RAREIS, Rare Is Scholarship. For those pursuing an education while living in a rare disease comes with unique challenges. And the Every Life Foundation supports students in the rare disease community by facilitating community scholarships. This scholarship, Rare Is open to all residents in the U.S. who are 17 or older with a physician-diagnosed rare disease. If you plan to enroll in an accredited 2 or 4 year college, university, vocational, or trade school, there's no minimum credit hour requirement. It would be a one-time scholarship of $5,000, which is awarded to up to 30 rare disease recipients each year. There's more information about this on the Every Life Foundation website, as well as more in-depth information on each of the asks and the other things that we discussed tonight. And I'm going to throw it back to Melinda.
Thanks, Kathy. So as you can hear, Every Life is involved in more than just Capitol Hill and that legislative advocacy, such as that scholarship that Kathy mentioned. There's another program that's called Pride in Rare. This is a program for people who are affected by a rare disease and also belong to the LGBTQIA+ community. Every Life has created this group to become more involved in policy and legislative efforts, as well as opportunities to participate in advocacy based on the intersectionality of their identities. In addition, there's another program called the Rare Artist Program. This program was established by Every Life in 2010. It's a national advocacy program at the intersection of art and health. Through creative expression, this program translates lived rare disease experience into advocacy, storytelling, and public impact. There is an art contest as a part of the Rare Artist Program, and it also offers year-round programming and resources that support creative expression and advocacy. Lastly, there's a program I wanted to share with you called the Young Adult Rare Representatives, and they call themselves the YAR program. YARs are rare disease community members between the ages of 16 and 30. The main purpose of YAR is to instill confidence in the next generation of rare disease advocates. Every Life wants to ensure that young adults can have an impact on public policy in the rare disease space, and that they offer skill building opportunities to foster growth for each YAR member's advocacy journey. So if any of these opportunities or just the topic of advocacy is interesting to you, Kathy and I'd love to talk about this further with a group in our LH1 community at a meeting together in April at a time that works for those who are interested. So let us know either tonight or reach out to Kathy or myself by April 1st so we know who might want to join us and talk about how we can better advocate for LHON. Thank you so much for your time tonight. And if there's other questions, please feel free to reach out to either of us, and we'd love to try to answer it tonight or get back to you with an answer if we don't know tonight. Thank you. That's it.
Love it. Thanks, both. Any questions for Kathy or Melinda? Does everyone have the Rare Disease Day marked in their calendars for February 28th?
Yes.
I personally take it as a day to buy myself a present. It should be a plant this year.
Oh, very good.
I love it, Jessica. That's a great
that's
present.
Right.
Great
that's idea. Right. The gift that keeps on giving.
It's all right. Yeah.
Kathy and I we had an amazing time on Capitol Hill. And the training that we got, since we were both completely clueless, honestly, when we got there, by Every Life was an amazing experience as well. They really made us feel, within a day and a half, prepared to be good representatives for rare disease in general and also for LHON specifically. So that was... it's a great organization, and it would be awesome to continue working with them with all the opportunities they're providing to those in the rare disease space.
Yeah, they were impressive.
Thanks for your representation. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, love that. All right, well, mark your calendars. It sounds like there was a ton of rare groups too, which is super cool. I feel like that's pretty new, right, Melinda?
You know, I think Kathy said they were founded in 2009.
2009 is what it
2009.
Said.
2009, okay.
Yeah, new to us because we only just started the relationship in the last year. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Awesome. Well, if no one has any questions, definitely wanted to make sure that was part of the recording. But if you do, please feel free to reach out. It's great. It's great that we're involved from down the ground up. That's awesome. All right, last but not least, the other new segment I was going to call out is, so CSUN is actually next week. CSUN is an assistive technology conference that's happening actually in Anaheim, California. I do know we have a couple people actually attending CSUN, so shouting you out, I see you over there. And so if you do attend conference, to be able to make sure pop back and let me know that you've been, and we'd love to kind of hear how it goes. I think what we're looking for is any of the coolest, latest, and greatest assistive technology that's out there that looks cool, that you found interesting, or we as an LH1 community would benefit from, would be ideal to share out. And if you are in the accessibility space and are interested in software engineering and want to nerd out with me a little bit, there also was a conference, and it's totally free. It's called AxCon. And what I thought was really interesting about this, to bring it up here in this call, is they were talking a lot about accessibility and just kind of what's out there in the world when we talk about laws and regulations, and how, gosh, there are governments on governments, from the United States to the European Union to a lot of other countries, that are currently fighting for all the digital assets. So every website and mobile app and any sort of your phone and all of those things to be accessible for us all the time. So there's a lot of laws in place, and things continue to happen as we know, the world continuously evolves pretty fast in technology. So I think the biggest thing to share is that there's laws in place to make sure everyone's doing the right thing, but there's also a lot of people in the places to make sure we're doing the right thing, so we as people with disabilities can access all of it. So it's really interesting to kind of see. So those two conferences are happening, or the AxCon one happened last week, and CSUN with the Assistive Technology, that conference actually happens next week. So two little fun conferences.
Jessica, Lorenzo, did you want to bring up on the recording and non-recording on the FDA approval.
We can mention it on the recording line, Lorenzo. There's been no public announcement about it, so at this point, there's really no news to share. But yeah, we'll come back to it when we can. Back to you, Jessica.
Thank you for asking. I heard one more question. No?
Also, okay. Someone brought up put me in a chat thing earlier. I didn't get to respond to it about the medical access grant.
I don't know anything about that, but does anyone else know to share?
Yeah, I do. This is Melinda. And it was Nancy Holmes who posted in our global LH1 group. And yeah, there's a grant that the Meta Smart glasses or AI glasses are putting out there. And one of the requirements for their grant is that we share how we are currently as a community using that technology, so that she, Nancy, asked if anybody has a picture of them actually using the Meta glasses, if they would share that on the Facebook site, that she'd love to use that as a part of the grant application that we are writing right now. The grant is actually due this Monday, so it's very, very quick turnaround. We found it just recently, so that's why she's asking for it on Friday, which is pretty fast. But if you all can, or have a, if you use them and you find them to be useful, if you have a, can get a picture of yourself doing that thing, or if they're already on your face and you have a picture, that would be just super to, and we'd love it if anybody actually wants to make or has a video of themselves, 30, 60 seconds, not long, saying why they like the glasses and what applicability they have, we would add that as well. They're accepting both videos as well as images.
Yeah, and Nancy posted in the global group like an hour before this call, I think.
Yeah. And this is Lissa. I mean, she told you how to provide it, but you know, anyone who has a photo or a video and you can't remember where to send it, just send it to me and I'll facilitate it with you for you. So it's always easy to reach me.
Thank you.
Love that. Anything else before we jump to calls? Okay, cool. Well, this is old news, but if you missed it, I'm bummed that you did. So yesterday there was a call. It was the LH1 Affected Women call. That happened yesterday, and it is twice a year. So if you did miss it and you are an affected woman, please put that on your calendars for next time. It is twice a year. And I will share that the calendar that is on LH1.org is up to date. So if you're looking for this call to pop back up for it again, so go scope out the calendar and map out your favorite vacations around these calls, because it's wonderful. So check that out. But next call after this is the U.S. South Central call, and that is on Monday, March 9th at 6 p.m. Central. Please note that that's the same time. Oh, no, that is different time. Don't listen to me. It's Monday, March 9th at 6 p.m. Central. next call up is the U.S. Northeast Connect call, and that's on Tuesday, March 10th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Then it's Moms of LH1 Affected Kids, and that's on Wednesday, March 18th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then that is a wrap for March. So looking forward to it. Can't wait to hear how everyone's starting to plant their planting boxes and backyards and gardens. Chris, thank you so much for being here and really kind of letting us dive right in and letting our green thumbs shine. And Kathy, Melinda, thanks for really sharing how every life has been a part of LH1 Collective. It's really cool to kind of see us out there planting seeds between dirt and Congress all throughout. So thank you all for being here. I'm going to pop and stop the recording, if you don't mind, please, Lissa.